You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Hey, we're back for another hour, and we had a great first hour. We talked to Chris Liu, who had went to Saban's office yesterday. Joined now by the great Pat Forty, who writes for Sports Illustrated. His latest headlined with Nick Saban started, Jimbo Fisher escalated. Now the feuding championship coaches must coexist at SEC meetings in less than 2 weeks as Bama A&M becomes America's hottest rivalry. Pat, there are some columns that just write themselves. I know that's a cliche in our business. I would think your most recent, while you gave it a lot of thought, probably the keyboard started typing before you sat down.
You are 100% accurate. This is one of those days when you don't have to agonize over what to do because the story presents itself in incredible fashion. I mean, for your job, for my job, for anybody that's an observer of college football, yesterday was one of the more remarkable days I can remember. I am still floored by what Jimbo Fisher said in response to Nick Saban.
And that's where I want to go because, you know, the Saban parsing is a cottage industry. Saban says something, he walks it back. We've seen that movie before, but we really haven't seen the movie from College Station, even though we saw a trailer, and not a very good trailer of that when he went clown show on Lane Kiffin, but a lot of people have gone clown show on Lane Kiffin. Nobody has ever gone like Jimbo did on Nick Saban.
Oh, you're 100% correct. I mean, yeah, you know, scoffing at Lane Kiffin is like another Tuesday anywhere, you know. But when it's Nick Saban, when it's, you know, the godfather of the league, the godfather of the entire sport, and you used to work for him, and you don't just open up a little. It's not just self-defense. It is scorched earth response and, like, a venting to the point where I almost felt like he was using the live microphone as a therapist couch and just airing every grievance he had against Nick Saban for the last 20 years. That was remarkable. I mean, for that reason, because it seemed very personal, but also just because coaches, as you know, don't go there in terms of basically saying that guy's cheating the way both Saban and Fisher went, but Fisher especially in response just, I mean, over and over and over again, saying, you know, check, inviting people, go check into his past, basically.
And I want to stay there because, you know, Saban said what a lot of people have said. It's just the fact that he said it, and I think he used that word "bought." That connotates us back to SMU days. But Jimbo, and I talked to a trained clinician yesterday about why, and she watched it and she said this guy's got some real anger going on here. You could break it down and psychoanalyze it 1,000 different ways, but what do you think he was? I know the answer in part by calling him a narcissist, by talking about his character, but where do you think he was really going there?
You know, again, I think that there was obviously a lot of built-up, pent-up feelings about Nick Saban, most of which were not very good. And I think that Jimbo kind of staked his territory in February and then subsequently in April that if you come at me about this class, I'm coming back at you, and I'm coming back hard, and almost to the point of he thinks he doth protest too much. But you know, he kind of basically has made that his default position. If you are going to say we bought these players, even though, you know, it's not nearly as controversial a thing to say now as it was 2 years, 4 years, 20 years ago, that he's coming back at you. And, the remarkable thing about that, I was talking to somebody who we were kind of comparing it, like, what's the most unhinged thing you've seen in the press conference? Well, maybe John Chaney saying he was going to murder John Calipari.
Yeah.
But that was heat of the moment. Fisher slept on it, got up, said, we're having the press conference, and then did that. I mean, that was, while it was certainly heat of the moment, it was emotional for him, but he had time to think about what he wanted to do, and that's what he did.
I'm not saying this to be funny. I talked to someone close to Jimbo Fisher who said he'd actually calmed down from the night before.
Oh, boy. Well, I guess maybe that's a good thing for Jimbo and everybody, but still, that was not a calm person at the microphone.
Most people side with Saban. I'm talking about people that call on a show like this, Pat, because you can't argue with his record. No one wants to argue with it. But in terms of chopping some of the bark off of the Godfather tree, was Jimbo Fisher successful in any way yesterday?
Well, I think so, because, while what the overall construct of what Saban was saying is supportable and logical, the specifics of saying A&M bought players, Jackson State bought the number one player, Miami bought this guy, that he threw some shots around with nothing specific to back it up other than, well, I've heard the same thing you guys have heard, basically. I read it in the newspaper. I'm not sure that's good enough to do that. And just because you're Nick Saban doesn't mean you get to necessarily take unsubstantiated shots at people. And so I think that Jimbo standing up and saying, I don't care who you are, I'm not going to let you do that to me, that had to resonate a little bit around the SEC.
You mentioned the SEC, and predictably we got the long statement from the commissioner's office yesterday afternoon. I know that people in our industry laugh at stuff like that, but is there anything the commissioner of the SEC can do now? It seemed like he tried to do something a few months ago. That didn't work. What happens next?
Well, that's a literal million-dollar question, time to earn that big salary, Greg Sankey. He already does in many other ways. But, one of the, I thought, geniuses of Mike Slive was to get the most contentious conference in the country to at least publicly get along. I'm not sure they got along very well behind closed doors, but they stopped some of the, over-the-top feuding that had gone on. Specifically, Alabama and Tennessee back in the 90s, but some other things too. And I think Sankey had done a good job of maintaining that and continuing that. But now, this is like an all-out brawl that you've got to step in and calm down. You got to do it quickly because these guys are going to Destin, and the media is going to Destin, and every eye is going to be on their interactions, and then everybody's going to want to talk to them. And if we just get, I don't want to talk about it, that's not going to be good enough, I don't think. I think Sankey has to sit down with those two guys, when they get to Destin, or even beforehand, say, hey, come to Birmingham, and say, look, we are hammering this thing out now. We're going to have something to say when we get to Destin, and we're going to do this together. We're not putting up with just an absolute back alley brawl between two of the most prominent coaches in this league.
And I'm eager to see that happen, but there were some other parties involved yesterday. Greg Byrne, the athletic director at Alabama, was quiet. You expected that. But the boss of Jimbo Fisher was not quiet. It looked to me like, Pat, he was talking to anybody that anytime his phone rang, he was accepting the call to back up his man.
Sure did. Even sounded like some echoes of him when he defended Hugh Freeze, quite frankly, back in the day when he was they were both at Ole Miss. But, he was very much out front on that. And, A&M has not been shy about kicking up dust about things that it doesn't like. If you go back to when Texas and Oklahoma were getting into the league. I mean, how did that word get out? Because A&M wanted it out. And then A&M people were commenting about it. And so, you know, they have taken an interesting approach to things. They are not going through back-channel communications, that's for sure. They're going to the media with this. And, hey, as a media person, I welcome it. Come talk to us. But if I'm like Greg Sankey, I'm not sure I'm in love with it.
In terms of the sustainability of this story, Saban talks a lot about how the model of the NCAA is not sustainable, but this story to me looks fairly sustainable for people like us, doesn't it? I mean, there's a long way between now and October 8th.
Yes, I would say so. I know that at our shop, both short-term and long-term planning has been adjusted a little bit today in terms of, like, what are we doing with this, you know? Because this is just – it's not just prurient interest either. I mean, it's pretty substantial stuff. I mean, what is NIL? What is it supposed to be? What are the collectives? How are they supposed to operate? What is the NCAA supposed to do about keeping them within a uniform set of guidelines? I mean, these are big issues, and they're just – everybody is so wound up and uptight about it because it's untethered territory – uncharted territory, I'm sorry, and some people are thriving and some people are not, and as you know, nothing gets people madder in college sports than a competitive advantage or disadvantage, and one exists right now for various people, and so you're just going to have this really volatile situation until people can get their arms around it.
Fantastic column and great conversation with Pat Forty. Pat, many thanks. We will talk to you soon.
All right, my pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Great stuff. I mean, amazing. What an analysis of the biggest story, really, in the college platform and maybe in all of sports right now. I know there's a lot going on with the NBA and golf and who knows what else, but there's no story juicier than Saban versus Fisher. We'll be right back. Much more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we're back. Great conversation there with Pat Forty. We've had a number of guests. We have still plenty of time to get some calls in here. And let's take AC next in Jersey. Hey, AC, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. Happy Friday, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, let me talk about Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban before your losers out there, they go out of control. Let's face it. Jimbo Fisher has all the right to defend himself. And by the way, Nick Saban, do you have clear evidence based on what you said about Deion Sanders and Jimbo Fisher? I mean, come on, dude. It seems to me rat poison is catching up to you, old man Nick Saban. Thank you so much for taking my call, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's continue. Curtis is up next. Good afternoon, Curtis.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
We are doing great. Thank you.
I'm glad you took my call. It's been a while since I talked to you, and I had to weigh in on this Nick Saban thing. Paul, I, like the man said earlier, we all human, we make mistakes. But he brought Deion, which I into it, which I thought was wrong. But the thing with me, Paul, about the whole thing is this. He had the number two recruiting class in the nation, and I'm going to just say it just like them Alabama fans. Crybaby Nick. And I'm sorry, and like Stephen A. would say about them, my Cowboy fan, about us being Cowboy fans. That's the way I feel about Alabama fans. They are not. They just unruly. And Paul and I had the pleasure of meeting our football coach, and on the caravan, and Kelly Harper, and but I really enjoyed the visit with our football coach and. Everything, meet them and taking pictures, and I really think that he's going to do a great job. And the last thing I want to say is I would use a Charles Barkley line. I guarantee you, as long as Nick is still at Alabama and the landscape is changing, Alabama will not win another national title under Saban. And I guarantee you today that Chattanooga is playing Alabama in softball, that Chattanooga is going to beat them, and my Tennessee Vols will beat Nick in Knoxville this September. Well, October, excuse me, this October. I guarantee them three things. I Paul, enjoy always talking to you. You have
Thank
a blessed day and a blessed weekend.
You take care of yourself. Joby is up next in Texas. Hello, Joby.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I don't disagree with the gentleman before me about Nick Saban maybe not winning the national championship with this format, but I think there's a lot of people that would agree that he's, or that would argue that he's not the best coach ever. There's a lot of coaches that would argue that as well, but he is definitely the most accomplished. He's created a recruiting machine. So when you have the best talent, you're going to win. There's a lot of coaches that would win just as many national championships. Maybe not a lot of coaches, but a few that would win just as many, maybe more. I don't know, but, He's set himself up really good, but I'm amused by people saying that he's the best coach ever. But I think the main point of my call is to say that a year ago, or a little over a year ago, I remember when they announced that the Alabama quarterback was going to be getting $1 million agreement. I think right then, many of us thought this is going to blow up. This is going to blow up, And if Nick Saban didn't think that was going to happen, then he wasn't paying attention. I think he agreed as well that it was going to blow up. I don't think the schools are buying the players. I think they would be in trouble if they were actually paying the players. But there's a lot of alumni that have a lot of compassion, a lot of passion about the program. So anyway, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much for the call. You take care of yourself. How about David up next in Columbus, Ohio?
Yeah, Paul, I came from Alabama in 68, landed in Columbus. And that was Woody Hayes' last year winning the national championship. And it all went downhill after that. I drove for the city transit. I had Bobby Knight and the Indiana Hoosiers in 81. And he had just won a championship with Isaiah Thomas. Mm-hmm. And you know what happened after that. And I've been to three Saban games, and all I can say is they suffer from what a lot of us suffer from, and that's constipation on the brain and diarrhea at the mouth.
That's funny.
Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I went to live games, and some of the things they said, Bobby Knight, he got in trouble when he said if a woman is being raped, she should just relax, and it's going to be the inevitable. And they tore into him. He was going to the Final Four, and he had a whip at the press conference.
Right.
And they caught it with Calvert Chaney, was one of his players. He said he was a taskmaster. And of course, that didn't go over well with African Americans around. He even had Quinn Buckner. And the worst thing happened to him, I found out, is he shouldn't have never went undefeated. in I think it was 76, I believe it was, and it messed him up. And Nick Saban's the same way. They know if those players do what they say, they would never get defeated. The night I had him, he saw where if they had made their free throw, they would have beat Ohio State. They were playing Michigan that Saturday, and he threw the clipboard down, by the way, and cussed. There was a Michigan player. He said, we won't even guard him. That so-and-so can't throw a ball in the ocean. I watched the game, and it happened, and they beat him. These guys are micromanaging. It has nothing to do with against each other. And they're catching, like they caught up with Woody Hayes, Michigan did, and the rest of the Big Ten caught up with Bobby Knight. Michigan and Michigan State start having good team with Judd Heathcote and Michigan coach's name. Orr, I believe it was. And that's sort of what college sports is doing. Saban is feeling some heat. He lost for the first time to two of his assistants, and he better watch what he say for his attacking Deion. He'll be getting 2 and 3 5-star African American players there.
I thought of what he did yesterday, Wednesday, going after Deion. To me, was the most foolish because you're getting into an area there that could really backfire. I thought Deion was very calm in his response, but I think he learned watching Jimbo jump up and down. Hey, thank you so much for the call. That was interesting. JK is up next.
How you doing today, Paul?
Hey there.
Hey, man, I like those comments by old Mr. Forte there. Paul, I think what's going on right now is Nick is he's kind of nervous about these Texas schools and the SEC and the money that's going to be funneled by the donors or whatever from Texas is way more than what's going to be coming from Alabama. I think he's just nervous and he see what's coming down the pipe. So, hey, it's just Nick to me, as far as looking at those weak schedules that they play year in and year out, he really don't like no competition for real. You know what I'm saying, Paul? You can play Oklahoma's and the Clemson's and Ohio State's in the regular season, but it's better for you to play them in the postseason. I don't think he likes competition. He wants the minimum of competition. That's what I see coming from Nick. But as far as those comments that he made, I'm hearing the comments and the call-ins as if Jimbo said this stuff about Nick. And there's more people coming down on Jimbo for defending himself from Nick's remarks. What proof does Nick have that Jimbo paid every player that he has and Deion paid?
Well, the only proof he would have perhaps would be that they lost a player and the player said, listen, A&M offered me this.
But, Paul, where is the proof? If you make
he didn't attribute it to personal information. He attributed it to he read in the newspaper.
Yeah, that's just something he can come up with.
I'd like to know which paper that was.
Hey, what facts? Don't just put that out there. And where did Deion come in the mix? Just because the number one player said, I want to play at the HBCU, regardless of why he wanted to play, NILs are legal. So why even bring something that's legal?
Yeah, I agree. We're going to talk to a guest about that in a minute because I really after Jimbo went DEFCON 1 yesterday, it was hard to remember anything else that Saban said. But that was one of the more unfortunate things that he did say. JK, thanks. Appreciate it. We head to the break. Another guest around the corner on the Deion factor and all this and how college football could be at the abyss. It is Friday afternoon, and we appreciate you being here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we welcome you back. It is great to have all of you with us here, and look forward to talking to Terrence Moore, the former longtime columnist at the Atlanta Journal, and of course he's now with Forbes. We have not talked to Terrence in some time, and it's great to have him back on the program. Terrence, thanks so much, and I understand I know you've been working on a book on Hank Aaron. Is it out or is it about to come out? Good afternoon.
Well, yeah, actually, and good afternoon to you also. It is out, just came off the presses on Tuesday, so to speak. The real Hank Aaron, and hey, 95% of this book is stuff that you have never heard about Hank Aaron before or from Hank Aaron. It's a good read. Not just because I wrote it, but it's
no, and let me ask you about that, because it's such a such an important and influential figure, and I know that maybe people in the South you know, almost take him for granted because he's been so much a part
sure.
of us for so long, growing up in Mobile, and then you know everything he has done you know, with the early 70s of going through all of that. But how did you go about uncovering this, Terrence?
I was closer to Hank than any other reporter ever. We had a 40-year relationship. And one of the things that occurred to me before his death, he agreed to do this book, was that there are so many things that people either didn't know about Hank or misunderstood in regards to Hank. And one of which, and I'll make this part of it brief, everybody wants to look at it as if in that period in the early 70s was the only period when he suffered from haters, you know, the racist letters and the death threats and what have you, chasing Babe Ruth's record. But the truth is, he experienced that stuff for the rest of his life. And in the 45 years he spent as an executive with the Atlanta Braves, he was catching basically hell outside and inside the Braves organization, and I deal with an awful lot of that.
That is fascinating. And I mean, I having lived in the South my entire life, I'm not shocked by encountering difficulties, maybe a too charitable a word, but what can you tell, what was going on inside that organization?
Yeah, well, there was conflicts, and you have to understand that I call it the Muhammad Ali thing. And once, if you're a prominent black person, an outspoken a black person, put it in the lingo of a lot of people, and during that time period that you're outspoken, people hate you. And once you become harmless, like Muhammad Ali did in the minds of many when he could barely speak and had Parkinson's disease, then all of a sudden he's a great guy. Well, Hank Aaron went through something very similar. People remember the Babe Ruth thing and the horrors he suffered from that. People remember the end of his life when he was sort of like the guy that would smile a lot and throw out the first pitches at baseball games and be celebrated for hitting 715. Rather, but they forget, and I know because I was the guy he was talking to get this stuff out. They forget that period for the bulk of his life after he left Major League Baseball in 1976 for the next 30 or 40 years when he was out as outspoken as anybody in the history of baseball outside of Jackie Robinson about the racism in baseball, and there's considerable racism in baseball. And he would just be just crucified by the public. And again, I know that because I was writing his thoughts at the time, crucified by people in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that I work with, and it was just unmerciful. But people forget that aspect of Hank Aaron, and a lot of that is in the book.
Well, and the name of the book is The Real Hank Aaron, An Intimate
Yes.
Look at the Life and Legacy of the Home Run King by Terrence Moore. And I would like to come back to the subject maybe in a few days, Terrence, if you would indulge us, because I think it's still a topic that fans across this country are going to be fascinated by. But I do want to shift gears to your latest in Forbes under the heading, Nick Saban, with help from Jimbo Fisher and Deion Sanders, just shoved college football to the edge of destruction. I realize sometimes we can be drawn in, but you make some really interesting points in this piece. For those who have not had a chance to digest it, what happened this week that has sent the sport even farther down the road than it had previously gone? And it seemed like it had gone a pretty good distance.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And Paul, not to pat myself on the back, but I'm going to pat myself on the back because I think the last time I was on your show was right when the NILs started rearing its ugly head. And if you recall, I predicted that we would be talking about what we're talking about right now, that NILs would be just shy of the devil and one of the things that's going to ruin college football and college basketball, for that matter. But basically what I wrote about was Nick Saban went beyond opening up a can of worms here. And I can't figure out, and I'm going to ask you this question here in a minute, but Nick Saban basically went out and attacked Jimbo Fisher directly in Texas A&M for using NILs to basically as a recruiting tool and to buy players, so to speak. And, of course, as we all know, Nick backtracked considerably since that time. But he also mentioned Deion Sanders about how a player decommitted from Florida State to go to Jackson State because of NILs and what have you. Now, here's what I don't understand. We all know, and you probably more know better than anybody, that Nick Saban is not a dumb person. He is playing chess like crazy and always has. He does not do anything without a calculated move. So anybody with any common sense would know that if you would say the things that Nick Saban said on Wednesday to that group of businessmen in Tuscaloosa, where he knew that it was going to get out there to the nation and around the world, anybody would know that everything that's happened since then would happen. So I've been trying to rack my brain, like, Nick being a chess player, why did he do that? And then I can't think of anything. So the only other solution is maybe we've just discovered this week that Nick Saban really is a human being, that he suffers from emotions, that he's very upset that Texas A&M outdid him when it came to a recruiting class. Maybe he's very upset that his former assistant coach, Kirby Smart, beat him in the national championship game. Maybe he's upset that Jimbo Fisher was his first former assistant coach to beat him in a regular season game back in October, and he just lost his mind and said something that's going to change the course of college football. Because in my opinion, what's going to happen now, and I mean, this to me goes beyond Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, and Deion Sanders, the main characters right now, because what they did was, with them sniping at each other, saying that, no, you did this, you did that, and no one's talking about what you did back in 1974 or what have you, this is opens it up for everybody to talk about all the bad things, and we know there's been a lot of bad things, that has gone on and that is going on in college football when it comes to recruiting.
That's interesting, that because I think sometimes we overthink these things, and it's just an opinion here, Terrence. But
sure,
I don't think Saban really intended to say exactly. I think he intended to say there are a bunch of people cheating out there, and there's even one in our conference. I just don't. I think he, or Texas A&M did that, and it's legal, even though it shouldn't be. But he just he said words that you and I remember back in the day. When you buy something, that's a red flag.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Paul. I can go for that if it was just Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
But once you start bringing the Deion Sanders thing, okay, that's when I start thinking to myself, okay, is this calculated? Because I mean, there's no way in the world that if somebody would have told me just a week ago that Nick Saban would say anything close to this, I would say, yeah, no, you got to be kidding me. Okay, and maybe he might just say it about Jimbo Fisher, perhaps, you know, Texas A&M and its history going, you know, way back to Jackie Sherrill. You know, we all know about that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, so you figure, well, okay, maybe it's but when he starts bringing in Deion Sanders, okay, the guy that he does a commercial with,
right,
is like, is this calculated or he's just, you know, there's something more here?
And on that front, I want to talk more about Deion Sanders, because I thought Deion handled it very nuanced. And maybe Deion just looked at and saw what Jimbo said and said, you know what, I'll leave the stage to Jimbo today. I'll come back some other time. But what do you think that really says, though, in relation to an HBCU when Nick Saban just kind of went past that and really unattributed. He said, I read it in the newspaper or something.
Yeah, well, and again, you talk about Deion, and again, maybe I'm reading too much into this. I don't think so. I mean, Deion all but said, you know, when you listen to what he told the Jackson Clara legend, and I believe they were the ones that got the quote from him when they were asking him about the situation, because, you know, Deion said a couple of things, and then he came back and he just kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, as a matter of fact, I got this direct quote here. He says, "I don't even wear a watch. I know what time it is. They forget I know who's been bringing the bag and dropping it off. I know this stuff. I'm not the one you want to play with when it comes to all of this stuff." That, to me, sounds very clearly what I was wondering about, that Deion is saying, okay, you want to start a nuclear arms race here about saying who did what or who may have done this? Listen, I know a lot of stuff that I can say, so just keep messing with me. And that, to me, is a very, very scary thing. If you want to have civility in college football, which we know that's long past, but that to me, kind of signals that this is going to be an arms race coming up here.
There, it seems like it's headed that way. Terrence, we have so much more to talk about. We need to reconvene here soon, talk about Hank Aaron and get your thoughts on some other issues that matter to all of us. It's really great catching up with you again.
Sure, yeah, just let me know. I've got lots. I'm always available for an opinion.
Well, we will take advantage of that offer. Thank you, Terrence. It's great to have you on.
Okay.
Terrence Moore, a longtime columnist at the AJC, now author, of course, on the Hank Aaron book, and he writes for Forbes. And we are coming right back with much, much more.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
And we are back here as we wrap up the second hour. Jay Williams will join us in a few minutes. He's had some very strong comments about Nick Saban and the controversy going on. Let's get back to the calls. 855-242-7285. And James is in Houston. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you.
You know, ever since Jimbo walked on Texas A&M's campus about 4 years ago, Nick Saban saw the signs coming up, first on the recruiting trail. He took a couple of recruits from him that first year, and it's been happening every year, and the results were not shown on the field up until last year when they took him down 41-38. So Coach Saban saw the trends. He's fed up with how NIL has shaped out over this past year almost, and he had a temper tantrum. I mean, we all know, we've seen him on the sidelines, we've seen him react, we know he can blow a fuse, and he blew up. And finally we have someone who's a prominent name, Jimbo, in college football that said, you know, I'm sick of it. We know the statistics on Coach Saban's assistants playing against him, and Jimbo was the first one. And so, you know, this has been brewing for a while. But what I love about Jimbo is Jimbo had his presser yesterday at 10 in the morning. He left that presser. He walked right back up to his office, and he just got right back to it. He's not going to think about this feud with Coach Saban one more minute. He's not going to think about it again. He's focused on recruiting this summer, getting his players prepared. His number one recruiting class is walking on campus in less than 2 weeks. So he's going back to work. I'm not worried about it. I'm really excited for the game on October 8th. It's going to be probably the biggest game of the season. And I know College Game Day, and I know you guys have that date circled. It's going to be really exciting to see.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I think everybody has it circled now. I think a lot depends on what A&M does between now and then. Once the season starts, they have some really difficult games, so that's going to affect. If A&M loses a game or two to Arkansas or someone else, then that game will be tilting dramatically in Alabama's favor. In Vegas today, Alabama's already about a 16-point favorite. Thanks for the call. Let's check out Zach, who is in Gainesville. You're on the air. Hello, Zach.
Hey, Paul. I mean, I've been in hiding probably since Georgia won the national championship. I just want to be honest, but I got something else I need to talk about today, and the way Jimbo Fisher is talking to Nick Saban. Who does Jimbo Fisher think he is? Did you see what kind of program he ran at FSU? Texas A&M sold their soul to get Jimbo Fisher, to get a good coach. You see what he let him do with Jameis Winston? And I don't need to get personal. What kind of man is Jimbo?
Well, hold on a second. And I'm pretty cognizant of the situation with his wife. That's a very complicated situation, and I would prefer to leave it there. We are at the midpoint of the show. We've had some fantastic guests. Chris Lowe joining us, talking about his visit with Saban yesterday. Pat Forty, some very volatile comments about where we are here. And, of course, you heard Terrence, and we have a number of guests, including Jay Williams, who'll join us next on his view from a distance. I think some of us are too close to it. We'll be right back.